So the painful truth, ladies and gentlemen, is that this is an ongoing exploitation. It has been orchestrated by this group over time, and that what we need to do now is to expose it to as many people as we can, along with the rest of these criminal conspiracies that we have so aptly described to you on these broadcasts. We are certainly in a very tight spot right now, because it is my belief that it's going to be very difficult for us to fight back against this crime gang if we are not getting our sustenance, our food stuffs, and so forth. So a little sidebar here, a little issue that I have been promoting quite heavily, is that people start planting their own gardens. This is an important element to their own survival, people having the ability to feed themselves, at least in a minimal sense, by tilling up a plot of land on their own property or finding a place to till and placing those seeds into that ground and tending that garden until it harvests, and being able to start supplying more of your own food needs, which is an important element to all of our survivals in this world. So it is my suggestion that you do that. This gives power back to you in the event that these problems actually become worse than they already are, and in my view. Well, we've got Andrew back on the line. Andrew, are you with me?
Yes, Darrell. Can you hear me?
Ah, that's much better, Andrew. Great to have you here, my friend.
Yeah, good to be doing the show with you. The home phone didn't work, so they've went out on my cell phone.
Ah. That's very strange that the home phone didn't work. Those are the ones that usually do work.
Yeah, well, we always get a better line on that, don't we? It was always the other way around for you and me when we've had our private calls and previous shows.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I was just describing to the public here the idea that back at the turn of the last century, the period called the Boer Wars in South Africa. Was in fact a mineral grab, and it was actually a coup d'etat, if you will, because they came down with their forces under Mr. Oppenheimer and Mr. Rothschild and the British military, and pretty much kicked the tar out of the country, knocked its farming industry into destruction, and then killed off a lot of its farmers, and then started exploiting the mineral wealth. And is that an accurate overview of this whole period in history?
Yes, it is. So, I mean, essentially, they needed to move the farmers out of the way so they could get the land that was under their feet that had all these minerals in it. And I looked into a bit more about Harry Oppenheimer, and basically, I found some very interesting things about him. He died when he was about 90 off in 2000. Now, in his will, he left £30 million. That was what he left in his will. And his wealth was estimated at £3 billion. But his will declared his personal wealth at £30 million. And this is something that we know a lot of billionaires do. They put the bulk of their fortune in a trust to protect the assets for the future benefit of his descendants. And so whereas if you and I, when you or I die, we'll have up to a certain amount, and then we have to pay, well, in England, you have to pay 40% tax on everything, I think, above a quarter of a million. And so this guy's able to keep all $3 billion for his descendants. And they describe these trusts, oh, well, they give to different organisations and universities. Well, yeah, it's quite easy to give a few million when you get the opportunity to protect billions, you know, and this is just what they get away with. Anybody in this Zionist group, when they die, they get to not pay any tax whatsoever. When we die, we have to give half of ours back to the state, and that is why you have this perpetual situation that they control the wealth of the world, and we get nothing.
Well, you know, you're very correct in all of that, and the fact is, trusts have been used by families like the Warburgs. What we know is that in Europe, they are controlling mass amounts of assets and companies through trust agreements, but the Rothschilds have used the same approach, as well as many of the larger Zionist Jewish families in the United States. And so when they pool those resources together, it is almost hands down the largest block of money and power control on our planet, without a doubt.
Well, yes. In this article that I got on this subject from mainstream source, actually, there's a quote here. It says, attempts to minimize debt duties through the use of trust funds are legal, but questions are bound to be asked about the ethical implications of South Africa's richest individual protecting his vast personal wealth from taxation in a country where millions of people live in grinding poverty and where the government does not have the resources to improve their lot. And after his death, who said it was Nelson Mandela and Thabo Mbeki, they paid tribute to Oppenheimer, and they stated, for building the economy and creating employment for hundreds of thousands of South African citizens. And that just goes to show you.
Yeah. Last week, I made a mistake, Andrew, when I was doing my intro rant about saying the Prime Minister being marshaled around the world as a spokesperson for Zionism. It was actually their ex-president who they have used.
Yeah.
In a very communist way, to promote much of the this Zionist dogma. Now, what we do know also is that when I looked into a couple of these largest gold mines in South Africa, most of the ownership was in the largest New York and London banks. They were the people controlling the largest block of shares in these corporations. And so basically, they were spiriting out of South Africa much of the wealth, the mineral wealth, and you can tell that the promises the government has made, and you pointed it out in this article, that Thabo Mbeki has made and others have made throughout history to solve some of the problems of the poorest of the poor of South Africa living in some of the most difficult areas, has never been met, and it's always been because there wasn't enough funding or money. The fact is, the money has been plentiful. It's just been being taken out of the country and put in the hands of other, well, of this crime gang that we've been fighting is what's been happening. But that's not unique, is it? We've seen this go on in many countries in the world, including the United States and in France where I am, and in Britain, of course. You want to expound on some of the other things that you discovered when you looked at this?
Well, yes, I mean, and again, you know, we can see this wealth there. The people of South Africa aren't seeing it, and they wouldn't see it from Nelson Mandela, because he was nothing but a terrorist. He wrote a book, How to Be a Good Communist, or rather a pamphlet. And the ANC in South Africa, high up in there, was Albie Sachs and Joe Slovo, both Jews that were white in appearance.
Let's talk about Albie Sachs and Slovo. Let's talk about who they are, where they're from, and what's the significance of these two people.
Right, well, Slovo actually ended up in Nelson Mandela's first administration as Minister of Housing, which is probably why you've still got all the shanty towns there now that you had when you walked in. The significance of these two individuals is it goes to show the link between Zionism and communism, and the fact that them going into the ANC was nothing more than a communist organisation, and it was designed to say, hey, we've ended apartheid and the power's gone to the black man in Africa. Well, if the power's gone to the black man in Africa, then why are these people still living, well, in certainly in the same poverty, but in a system that's far worse than it was under apartheid? You've got a rape every minute. It's the most crime-ridden country per capita in the world. And it's just it's terrible. But you know
darn well, see, what they've been able to do is to sell the public through propaganda, through their airwaves, that things are going to get better, things are going to get better, things are going to get better housing, better streets, better water, better schools, better health facilities. And the promises keep rolling off their tongues, and basically what we end up getting is more of the same. And when you look behind the scenes of this, like this man Slovo and the other, they're working directly for Zionist interests worldwide, including the interests of these exploited, the exploiting mines that have been the mainstay of their economy. And so what they've done is they've implemented a communist regime, but they don't implement communism over the natural resources of the country. They leave that in the hands of the criminals. So basically, these people are getting none of the benefits that they deserve, and their national wealth is being stolen.
Well, absolutely. And, I mean, I go through the Communist Manifesto in my book, as it was read in the Congress from the Congressional Record back in the 60s. And people think communism is one thing, and it's the dividing of wealth amongst the people. Well, that's the propaganda they use, but they don't look at all the other things of communism, which is basically the mixing up of all societies, the removal of national borders. Their biggest threat to it was the, you know, Germany, Britain, the great cities that were built, the thriving economies. And so, and they didn't want areas in Africa to develop either, so they started taking their workers and putting them into Western European countries. And so rather than these people have the opportunity to develop their own countries, they move them into a country that's already developed and then overpopulate that and create unrest because they put one group against another. If people live in perpetual, not necessarily fear, but really not even having an identity, and we don't have an identity anymore in any of these Western European countries because we're forced by political correctness to accept everything, you know, that they want us to accept. And there's a lot to be gained from saying, you know, I'm English, I look at my history, I'm proud of it, and I intend to, you know, live a moral and ethical life so that my descendants can say the same and have left something behind for my country. But there's no such thing as a country that exists anymore because it's just populated by hundreds of different races, especially over in Western Europe.
Well, you know, I'm not so much against it. See, if somebody were to move into my country from a different race, all I expect is that they start adopting the cultural norms that the society they're moving into has. I mean, that is the prerequisite. But see, that's not what they're promoting. They're promoting, you know, that when you arrive, you can be segregated into your own little world. And it happened they did it intentionally here in France with the Algerian population who they moved in. They ghettoized these people. They put them in apartments stacked high with very little access to an improvement in their situation. And then when they didn't offer these people opportunities and they didn't integrate them into the French society, they turned around and blamed the immigrants themselves for the lack of the government's work. But I'm telling you, Andrew, that was a policy decision done intentionally so that at any moment they want, they can spark unrest in the society, which they have done repeatedly. And they did they did not integrate these groups into France or into Britain intentionally so that they would have a means of creating social unrest. And they've done it with the Turks in Germany. They've done it with the Moroccans in Spain, they've done it with many groups in throughout Europe, but they do it with the Latinos in the United States. This is a tried and true tested crime method of creating problems, and they do it by saying, oh, well, you don't have to integrate into the society you move into. That's poppycock. You know it is. I came to France here, and my first goal was to learn the language, and you must do that, and you must learn the French culture and stuff, because why would I expect to come to a foreign country and have them live by my methods and my rules?
Well, I totally agree 100% with what you said there, Daryl, and this is a subject we've sort of touched on before in previous shows that we've done, and it's always a dangerous subject to go near because people assume racism and what have you. But on what you've said there, I'd like to add, I'm now, at the moment we're doing a show aimed at the Islam community primarily. I have absolutely no problem with Islam, but I would not convert to Islam. And at the same time, I wouldn't expect Muslims to convert to Christianity. We have our faith, they have their faith. But by bringing these cultures, say, over into the UK, I can talk about, because this is where I'm living, then you'll get this culture come over, and then they'll want to build their mosques and different things like that that isn't suited to this country. And so it creates division because however much you force this political correct, I think we have a perfect right to do this, a perfect right to do that. the division is there because I agree with what you said. If someone's going to go over to another country, it has to be out of respect for that country, and they have to be prepared to take on their customs, their language, and their laws. But what this group do...
Yes, but
is
at the same time, now one of the things, one of the areas that I've never thought people had to follow anybody's home rule was in the area of spirituality. Someone's spiritual beliefs should be sacrosanct, and they should be allowed under any conditions to continue their strongest ties to their spiritual life. And by that I mean, if someone has interest in having a mosque, what it needs to be done here is that people need to understand that integrating into the society is not just whether a mosque exists or not, but rather, are you trying to integrate into the social fabric of the society in general? Do you work to forward the goals of the society in which you're living in? Now, for me, France is almost a religious free. Most of the people living in France are atheists.
Mm.
Sadly for the culture here, because the culture was based upon Christianity. But what's happened here is that people of faith are now being looked upon with consequence in France. And it's almost now where it's politically incorrect to have a faith, I think, that's dangerous, because out of our faith, I've had the great pleasure of meeting so many people from Islam, and I grew up in a Christian culture. Now, the best of these two religions are very good in promoting a good quality morals, where you don't, have loose sexual mores, and you don't have drug use and problematic behavior, and you're family orientated. These kinds of beliefs come from both of those communities and should be vaulted in our discussions. What we've got instead are these two cultures and these two good ideas of morality being destroyed by the people who control our television sets and our film industry and our pornography industry and the rest of it. And what they're doing is destroying family values. You didn't hear in the beginning, I did a thing about PepsiCo, where the PepsiCo company is spending millions of ad dollars to promote homosexuality worldwide. Now, these kinds of things destroy the quality of life of people and destroy faith in good family values. They destroy them. Now, when I see these kinds of things happening, I know it's by design. It's not mistaken. It's not somebody doing this by mistake, Andrew.
Yes, I agree with you, Darrell, and it all boils down to the fact that they, people do have a right to have these, the spirituality, the faith that they want, or the right to believe in God or not to believe in God. The problem is that there are situations, many people in the UK, that immigrants over here, and they cannot actually speak English. And so what hope have they got of integrating into the society? And so they remain, so the divisions remain to be seen. And naturally, if I was going to move to another country, as you moved to France, I would do it for love of that country, and I'd want to learn the language. It wouldn't be a problem for me, something that, would be something I couldn't be bothered to do, because that would be the reason that I went. And so you're going to get these divisions, and by using political correctness to try and cover it up, it's not going to work. What's going to work is if people make an actual effort to integrate into the society. This is not required in the society, and that's how they get away with these divisions.
Well, it used to be required in the United States that when you moved to the United States, you were required to learn English as your first language, and that even after a generation, the immigrant's home language was almost, it wasn't completely forgotten, but their children grew up speaking, of course, the new language of their country. And the society made available people, they could take lessons in English language. You could not become a citizen of the United States unless you knew English. Today, that's no longer true. Now, they offer driver's licenses in Spanish. They have Spanish welfare documentation where you go down and you get everything in Spanish. And my point is this: is this in itself causes serious divisions within a country. Now, when I get back to South Africa here for a moment, the South African experience here of having one of the wealthiest natural resource nations on Earth. And not only that, one of the most beautiful, with the coastline and the fishing industry and the wildlife and then the mineral wealth and the place is just a mountain of value in our world of so many different types. And yet, the public there has been bamboozled into believing that the way they've structured their economy is a benefit to the public when in fact it's anything but that. And what I'd like to talk about here is maybe the Oppenheimer and Rothschild backing through Britain of this Boer War and what its consequences were, so that the people are very clear in knowing that they had their nation stolen from them over 100 years ago.
Well, yes, exactly. And what basically happened there was the Rothschild-Oppenheimer link, and it's actually quite interesting. Again, if you're aware that with Rothschild, it was decided from the first Rothschild that the women of the family would never have anything to do with the family business. Well, it was the same when Oppenheimer died. Not one of the seven Oppenheimer women has ever entered or shown any interest in taking over the reins of the dynasty, which is quite interesting, really, because Jews have a matriarchal society as opposed to, Muslims, Western Europeans having a patriarchal society. And so it's sort of goes against that, but it's consistent with Rothschild. We know the links there, and the fact is that they became aware of this mineral wealth, and they wanted it. They wanted to control it, and so they used the British Army, which was there. Essentially, this was going back to the all the British colonies and what have you, so Britain were the nation on which the sun never set around the world. So the most powerful army in the world, and they were the ones that were used as the Rothschild-Oppenheimer attack dogs to get their resources. So, again, a lot of British died for these people, as did a lot of Africans die, mainly Afrikaners,
yes,
far as. And so British died, they died, and Zionists got the money, which is what's happened in every war since.
That's right. And well, we've got a break coming up here, Andrew. I want to take a break for the sponsors. And so we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, just after these messages.
Business or pleasure. Huge savings guaranteed. Let us tailor a deal for you. From the half-tonner Nissan 1400 to the incredible hard-body workhorses. And the magnificent 4x2 and 4x4 double cabs and SUVs. Motor Deal Nissan also offer you Islamic finance. Pay no interest. Call Motor Deal at 016-981-2220 and save.
How much do you know about the history and preservation of the Quran? Are you seeking to enrich your relationship with the Quran? The Al-Kawthar Institute presents Treasures of Revelation, Principles of Tafsir by Sheikh Abu Abdissalam. Explore the reasons for revelation and some of the specific incidents that occurred during that period. All this and more taking place at the Wits Medical School in Johannesburg on the 28th February and Sunday the 1st of March. For ticket sales and bookings, call 082-740-8021.
Here's some good news for CII listeners. Get a free copy of the new edition of Sisters Volume 2 by Naima B. Roberts with a 50 Rand CII Stewards gift voucher card for every Absa Islamic Bank account that you open. This incredible offer is only valid at Absa Bank CBD and at the Trade Route Mall in Asia. For more information, contact the store at 011-852-0097. Terms and conditions apply. CII Stores, Africa's leading Islamic store.
Zakia, how should I discharge my zakat?
Well, according to SANSAF publication, certain family members must be considered first.
Really?
Yes. Then your neighbor or someone in your neighborhood, then your city, then your country.
But how do I know if they qualify for zakat?
Well, that's why I give my zakat to SANSAF, because they perform all the necessary checks on my behalf.
Of course. SANSAF. How can I forget them? They helped my neighbor's daughter with a bursary last year, and they even helped Uncle Ismail with money to start a small business.
That's right. SANZEF is development orientated. After all, it's much better to teach a man to fish than to give him a fish. Pay your zakat. It's the right thing to do.
This message was brought to you by the South African National Zakat Fund. Call 0861-SANZEF at 0861-726-923.
Because charity begins at home.
This is CII. You're listening to The French Connection.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back after our break. We're very grateful to our sponsors for allowing the most important broadcast to be sent around the globe, in fact. And it's my great pleasure to have my guest on. You know, these subjects that we've been talking about here, and they are designed to create discomfort in people when we bring them up. And, you know, I've known Andrew for some time now, and I also know that Andrew is a man who respects people who are of goodwill and righteous people, honest people, family people. This is the kind of environment that Andrew, I know, was raised in. I've spoken to his mom and so forth. I know that he has those values. And when we see the kinds of values that are being sold, and they are, make no mistake, being sold to us, in our popular culture, but not just in our school systems, but in our television sets, in our architecture, in our art world. There is not an area of our lives that is not under assault, and in a degrading sense. They are degrading our lives to the point where we have no values left. And I could not be more worried about the preservation of good family values and you know, it's even so bad as our health is under threat with vaccine and things that they place in these vaccines such as mercury and other things. My point being is that we are finding ourselves under a multiple faceted assault by this group. And it's working in many respects. And what we've got to do is reverse it through education. And this is what this program is about. It's about educating people so that they can take charge of their own lives. And respect for other people's cultures is paramount to this French Connection movement. And I want everyone to know that I respect individual cultures. One of the things that they don't want to have happen is that they don't want Islam and Christianity to start talking to each other. They would like war between those two groups to continue festering so that we will never turn our attention at the real manipulators, the people who intentionally bring in large numbers of people to a country all for the sole purpose of fomenting hatred between those groups. These are the kinds of events that they have orchestrated through policy.